Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. As we age, forestalling and even reversing bone loss becomes more and more important. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Bone Health Protocol, my personal supplement recommendations to ensure your skeletal health. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com. In addition to the Bone Health Protocol, you'll find easy-to-follow links from my Supplement Starter Kit, Heart Health Protocol, and much more. These new protocols are an easy way for you to get the exact combination of targeted supplements you need to help you follow the Intelligent Medicine lifestyle, and for a limited time, you'll get free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mutin, because, of course, it's our weekly Q&A with Layla. It wouldn't be the same without Layla, because Q&A with Layla without Layla...
That doesn't work.
It's a non sequitur. It just doesn't make any sense. Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Layla, what are you working on in terms of your weekly podcast this week?
Oh, my goodness. Let's see. I just did something on the importance of protein in avoiding frailty in seniors. There were some other nice clinical pearls having to do with various antioxidants that I got into. I think I most recently also did the dangers of caffeine, which is a link that you sent me, Dr. Hoffman.
Yeah, because we're all over the caffeine thing. Now it's like caffeine was bad.
Yeah.
Then caffeine is great. You got to
four cups a day. Might be bad again.
Right. Let's temper our enthusiasm.
Exactly.
And,
or temper the use of caffeine.
Right, because for some people, it's a problem.
Yeah.
And it's probably very individual.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, this week I hit upon the idea of coming up with my, the top 10 worst health articles of 2018.
Wow.
And there have been some bad ones.
There have been some really bad,
like, clickbait headlines that don't really reflect what the studies say, misrepresenting the findings,
yes.
Poisoning the well for people
it's
who want to take...
It's called fake news, misrepresenting the findings.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Fake news.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I think I heard that term. Somebody's talking about it a lot.
Click on my link, please.
Right.
That's what that's about,
okay.
Unfortunately.
So, yeah, fake news is not the exclusive province of the political media.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. So we have another email from Michael. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I know you eat many eggs, yet I was recently told if they're hard-boiled, the cholesterol in the yolk changes to a less healthy form. What is your take on this? And what this is when cholesterol is exposed to heat during cooking, some of it oxidizes. It combines with oxygen, forms new substances called oxysterols, and once they're in the system, oxysterols are active compounds that help regulate fat metabolism and may contribute to hardening of the arteries.
Yeah.
And this was in a review, in Circulation Journal, actually back in 2010, but more
2010.
Research is needed.
Yeah. You know, this argument was raised years ago.
Around then,
But it hasn't really... weathered the test of time.
No, it hasn't.
Because, there are these periodic frights, like...
Yeah. Don't beat your eggs before you put them in the pan.
What
You're
was
oxidizing
the What was the thing about
the
toasted cereals? What was it called? The
acrylamide.
Acrylamide is an example of that, is that technically it is correct that when you make a French fry or when you have a toasted breakfast cereal, post-toasties, you're going to create acrylamides.
Mm-hmm.
And they're potentially hazardous.
Mm.
But is that of consequence in terms of human nutrition and experience?
Yeah.
And the same thing is true technically when you overheat cholesterol, being an unstable compound, you can create oxidized cholesterol.
Mm-hmm.
And oxidized cholesterol in the body is a problem.
Yes.
Because it oxidized LDL cholesterol is a more dangerous type of LDL.
Yeah.
But the question is, does ingested oxidized cholesterol contribute to the body's burden of oxidized cholesterol?
Mm-hmm.
And if so, is that consequential in terms of health?
That's true. And that really is the question. They talk about oxidation products found in many commonly consumed foods during their manufacture, their processing. Well, my argument about this is also, don't forget that your stomach is also processing what you eat. There are three ways to cook food. Eat, heat, agitation, and acid.
Okay.
Agitation and acid are happening in the stomach. So you could eat that soft-boiled egg and know that you haven't disturbed the cholesterol, but boy, is it going to be disturbed during the digestion process.
So you think there could be natural formation of oxycholesterol?
Possibly. But I don't think it's of consequence in that it's not endogenous. What is oxidizing our endogenous LDL? High blood sugar.
Yeah.
High insulin.
Yes,
inflammation,
yes.
Right. It's not the same thing that's going on.
It's being fried inside the body.
Right.
In effect.
Right.
Right.
It's rusting inside the body.
But
as opposed to
various inflammatory processes that damage the cholesterol within the body, not necessarily on the dinner plate.
Yes.
But, you know, there are certain types of egg products that may be less desirable. So, for example, powdered eggs. You know, how do they make powdered eggs? They heat the eggs and then they spray them like with a fine mist against a panel, and then they sort of drop off into a mixing vat, and they're dried.
Yep.
But those are harsh conditions of heat, right?
Yes.
Where maybe that exposes the surface of the at least with an egg, the egg is it's inside the membrane. I mean,
when you
scramble the egg, of course you open
it
up. But,
right.
I mean, I remember the days when we used to tell people don't have scrambled eggs, don't have fried eggs, just have soft boiled eggs or poached eggs.
Soft boiled or poached.
Yeah, but
like that.
I've gotten away from that lately.
Yeah.
I mean that's something I actually used to subscribe to. Mm-hmm.
I like scrambled eggs with my bacon when I have it. So, yeah.
Well, your bacon, which is full of acrylamides and, it's
and all that other stuff.
High heat,
High heat. What are we going to do? We've got to stop eating. There's nothing left to eat, Dr. Hoffman.
Well, this harkens back to an article, which I swear was called, it was a scientific article. It was entitled, Everything Causes Cancer.
Oh, yeah.
And it went through a recitation of every food imaginable and with copious references showing that to some degree or another, you could demonstrate that anything causes cancer.
Yeah. There's a song called Everything Causes Cancer.
Okay.
Yeah. By, I forget his name. Joe, somebody. It'll come back. At 2 in the morning, it'll come back. Anyway, you'll hear it next week. Anyhow.
Yes. I can,
from the
80s. Nice thing about it is you can look these things up.
It's so while everything causes cancer.
While you pose the next question.
Yeah. So, Michael, thank you for that about the oxidized yolks and such. I mean, that really, what does that do to hollandaise sauce? One of my favorite things to have with my roasted asparagus or my steamed asparagus, that would be a little tough. So, the next question is actually...
Joe Jackson. You're right about Joe.
Joe
Jackson.
Joe Jackson. Thank you very much
okay.
for looking at that.
What else is he famous for, Joe Jackson?
Lots.
Yeah.
Lots of good
music. I like Joe Jackson.
Yeah. Yeah. Always Something Breaking Us in Two is another hit by Joe Jackson. There's a lot more that isn't coming to me. But so we have an email from Aristotle.
Is she really going out with
that
him?
That one, yeah.
That's very famous from Joe Jackson.
So Aristotle writes, Dear Dr. Hoffman.
Aristotle. I mean, I haven't heard from Aristotle in a long time.
Yeah.
Is this like a medium? Because,
Well, Aristotle does have a Greek mother. So this is a nice little question here. I'm 68 years old. I haven't had any vaccines except tetanus and recently whooping cough in the last 2 years flu vaccine.
Okay.
In the 1950s, my mother was a newly arrived immigrant from a small village in Greece, didn't read or write. She heard of a death from a polio vaccine and refused to let me be vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I'm fine not getting any of the vaccines that I missed as a child, polio, measles, etc. However, I'm now regularly babysitting for my 3-year-old and 1-year-old grandsons for 10-hour days. I think I pose a danger to them by being unvaccinated. Should I get all of those?
Okay. Yeah, this is a tough question. And all vaccine questions these days are tough questions.
Yeah.
What we're supposed to say is that yes, technically you pose a threat because you could be a carrier.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that some of these vaccines prevent you from getting the disease, but don't necessarily prevent you from being a carrier. So that kind of argues against that approach, is to protect your grandchild. I mean, they're actually marketing vaccines. They have this cartoon of the big bad wolf to get the grandparents to be guilted into getting another whooping cough booster shot. And, you know, God forbid this kind of family discord that this creates, that parents of children may prevent the grandparents from seeing their grandchildren because the grandparents are listening to Intelligent Medicine and they're anti-vaxxers. You know, so they could create a real family tragedy here. And it's really, you know, scare tactics to market a vaccine in that fashion.
Terrible.
So that applies to whooping cough. I don't know whether it applies to polio.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think that polio is less likely to be transmitted unless there's an epidemic situation that recurs, which there hasn't been in this country for a long time. And
flaccid myelitis?
Yes.
Am I opening up a can of worms?
Well, no, but there's a variant, and it appears to be a gastrointestinal pathogen, a virus,
with
that is akin
symptoms?
To polio-like. Yeah, it's an enterovirus, which, like polio, you know, enters via the gastrointestinal tract. And it has been causing not always, because many recover from it, but some recover with paralysis, which is usually self-limited, but it seems to be resolving in a lot of these cases. Mm-hmm. So the question is this going to be a new epidemic, or is this just a bit of a glitch? Is it affecting just very immunosuppressed kids?
90% are in children, apparently.
Yeah.
Wow.
So they're keeping an eye on it.
Yeah.
Flaccid paralysis.
Yeah. Wow.
So I really don't know what to tell this person.
This is a dilemma for Aristotle. Yeah. This is a real dilemma.
But, you know, he did have the whooping cough vaccine. But
he did, and tetanus and
but
flu.
But what they're asking is that seniors get a booster.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're also giving out a lot of pneumonia and shingles. Vaccinations.
That's another thing. That's not so much for the kids' benefit. That's more for the adults' benefit.
For the adults, right? Okay. Best of luck to you, Aristotle, and those wonderful grandchildren of yours. All right. We have an email from Susan. Actually, before we get to that next question.
Yeah, thanks for reminding me. This is an opportunity for one of our sponsors to share an important message with y'all. So please listen up.
This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide.
Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you, and you don't even have to pay for it.
We have a question from Susan. I so enjoy your show. Thank you for all your time to produce the podcast. Much appreciated. Susan came across this article in regard to dry eye, and it seems that the fish oil must be prepared in a certain way, esterified instead of ethanol ester.
No.
To be effective.
Where did that come from?
And be pricey. So apparently experts discuss an omega-3 and nutrition in dry eye disease.
Really?
And the roles of omega-3s.
Is this another effort to take prescription?
It's possible.
To promote prescription EPA over...
Right.
Because the studies were done with the esterified and that worked.
Yes.
So, but that does not necessarily mean that the unesterified or the triglycerides won't work. There was a study that showed limited benefits of the triglyceride form, but the dosage was maybe a little low. But also, I got to say, when you're trying to treat dry eye, using fish oil alone is a mistake. You need to use borage oil or GLA.
Yes. The kind your skin wants, all those
right.
membranes.
And it has a moisturizing effect. So yeah. I didn't get a chance to see that article, but what's your sense of that article? Is it an article that comes from...
This comes from iWorld.
Which is a standard conventional journal.
Yes.
And the idea is what? That you've got to take Vascepa or you've got to take some other type of prescription EPA?
It's got to be fractionated because the other version, the ethanol ester version, contains alcohol which can further dry the eye.
Okay, well,
and the triglyceride version is what they're saying.
Yeah. I can't, you know, yeah. I'm not going to put it down without seeing it.
Right.
But yeah. what that suggests is that they're going to make an effort to enroll eye doctors in prescribing prescription fish oil of yeah. this kind. Is there a brand name associated with yeah. this?
There is no brand name. It's just simply a study for now. And they're just talking about these particular preparations. They do insist that the EPA to DHA should be 3-1, which we normally see mm-hmm. in most fish oil formulations.
Well, that's more like Lovazza, not like yeah. Vascepa, because Vascepa yeah. is just EPA alone.
Mm-hmm. All right. What this particular doctor... Another Greek name, Epitropoulos, Dr. Epitropoulos. Most over-the-counter omega-3s are in the less desirable ethyl ester alcohol form or in the uncleansed triglyceride form.
No. That uncleansed triglyceride. Look, I would like to see a conflict of interest statement from that guy. Like, he was funded.
Right.
He was funded, probably.
Right. There was a poster presented in the
funded 2011... Funded by a pharmaceutical company.
Yeah, American Academy
because
of Ophthalmology.
To use like an unscientific term, like what was the term he used? Unclean?
Unclean. Let's see.
Uncleansed?
Uncleansed.
No,
triglyceride form.
Triglyceride form is fine. It can be molecularly distilled and very
yeah.
highly purified, isn't
yeah.
it? But, so, I don't know.
Yeah. So, Dr. Gross said the physician-recommended nutraceuticals product is not sold directly to consumers and must come through a physician's recommendation.
Oh, okay.
You were right. Wait. PRN, Bluebell.
Oh, okay. So, I guess it's a... I'm sorry. I'm casting aspersions on the pharmaceutical industry. It's a supplement. It's a
yeah.
supplement that claims it's superior.
Then.
And based on a study that I haven't seen, maybe it'll turn out to be superior.
Mm-hmm.
But... You know, it's just looking for an edge in that marketplace. And we use a product called Moisture Eyes from, it's a play in words, Moisture Eyes.
Yes.
As opposed to moisturize, two words,
yeah.
or a dash between moisture and eyes by Carlson.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got all the constituents you need.
Mm-hmm.
You really have to take about 4 capsules a day, maybe 6 a day, if you have a bad dry eye. And
uh-huh.
over a period of a few months, you'll see some resolution of that.
Yeah. These particular doctors have a financial interest with PRN, which is the
okay.
nutraceutical that makes the product.
But, you know, maybe they're right, but you have to ask the question: is what
yeah.
are they? You know, follow the money trail.
Exactly. All right. Thank you, Susan.
That was a question from Susan who wanted to know if that product was.
Yeah. What do you think of that?
One of the
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
Well, it's probably okay, but mm-hmm. is it superior to the others? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, we sit in front of computers all day or we're looking at electronic devices. We're doing all of these things and we forget to blink,
mm-hmm.
which is your first source of moisture right there, your tears, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are other things. It could be allergy of the eye. It could be, ladies, your eye makeup.
Could be chemicals in the environment.
You got to remove it correctly and make sure, you know, warm compresses, warm washcloths in the morning. This was a patient of ours today that was telling me about that. That's given him the greatest benefit for his dry eye. And he's on Restasis.
Oh.
Scary
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah.
Restasis.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he's been on it for two years.
He forgot to tell you he was taking that medication, but
yeah,
I should have asked.
Yeah. Yeah. And he doesn't notice a difference, but the warm, moist compresses in the morning seem to make a difference for him. So that's interesting. That's actually very interesting. But fish oil is on the list for anybody with dry eye. Besides ruling out something like Sjogren's, and even if you
right.
did have Sjogren's,
mm-hmm.
fish oil is still beneficial.
Yep.
So, we have an email from Sue. This is a different Sue from the Susan who asked us about dry eye. Hi, Doc. What are your feelings on magnesium water? Mm-hmm. Now, when I look at magnesium water, I just see a big listing for mineral water. You know, your Gerolsteiner water and other mineral waters like
that are rich in magnesium,
and all of that that are rich in magnesium. It's a great way to get magnesium.
Right. I take my magnesium as a liquid. I use a product called Reacted Magnesium. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love it because it's got a stevia taste.
Yeah.
And I put a little in my water bottle when I'm spinning. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, when I'm taking my vitamins, I'll put a little bit of, like a half a scoop of the mm-hmm. powder in there. Yeah. And there's a substantial amount of magnesium in there in a form that's absorbable. So I drink magnesium water. I make myself magnesium water.
There you go.
But is it more bioavailable than magnesium pills? It's just a different way to get your magnesium.
It's a different way.
But probably magnesium water is a little bit weaker than a concentrated capsule.
Oh, I would imagine. Yeah. I take the same Reacted Magnesium, but I take it in a capsule form.
Okay. Did you try their powder?
No, I haven't. I haven't. I just take the capsule.
It's delicious.
It's good.
Good. Stevia.
Yeah. That's fine.
They figured out a way to make stevia without that sour taste that they had in the 90s. Mm. When stevia was introduced, it was like, well, it's really sweet, but it's kind of there's a sour aftertaste. They've used now some concentrate of stevia that they've extracted that it is much more a natural sweetness without a caloric
and without that
impact.
Aftertaste
and without apparently without damaging the microbiome, because
that's
we know that almost all the artificial sweeteners mm-hmm. Damage your microbiome. Mm-hmm. The only disadvantage that could be argued is that I am perpetuating my sweet tooth.
Yes.
And and if I really wanted to get rid of that, I wouldn't use any sweets.
Yeah.
But that's a little boring.
That can get a little boring, especially the holidays are here and so forth, and it's time to indulge.
But I do find, I had some Belgian visitors the other day, and they gave me some exquisite Belgian chocolates, and they said, this is dark chocolate. I said, not really. It's like really confectionery chocolate.
60%.
Yeah, it's about maybe 40.
Maybe 40%.
Right,
40%.
But it wasn't milk chocolate. Anyway, so I was polite. I said, thank you. And it's these little works of art. And sometimes I'll have one, and it's so cloyingly sweet. I mean, it's delicious, but you bet you can't eat one.
Just one, right?
One and done, because it's like my sweet quotient for the day.
Wow.
Compared to my dark chocolate, which has some sweetness. It's like, 90% or 88% or 95%.
For some people, that dark chocolate is really an acquired taste.
I had to get used to it.
You like your decaf coffee quite strong.
Yeah.
So you've got those kind of taste buds. That's pretty acquired.
Well, I blasted my taste buds out of commission, I guess. So, it's kind of like listening to headbanging music on my taste buds. So, there are people who are sensitive. They're bitter tasters who can't tolerate that. But
that's true.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's all the time that we have for today's set of questions. So we really appreciate your questions. Send them to radioprogram@AOL.com. Once again, a very happy Hanukkah and a happy lead up to Christmas. And we'll keep podcasting away right up until the holidays. So send your questions. We'll be happy to answer. Thank you, Layla.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.